Now, the voices of Bronco Athletics, Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
Most of the college teams have had inter-squad scrimmages in the last week, now that they're 10 to 14 days into camp. The NFL, though, does theirs a lot more publicly, and they charge full boat to see scrimmages over the weekend. Not many stars have played in week one. Several Boise State players have gotten in, and I must say, looking at some friends of mine on Facebook and Twitter that are Dallas Cowboy fans, not happy with one Kellen Moore.
That's not fun to hear. It's not fun to read. It's not fun to see when people are taking shots at Kellen Moore, but it's crazy because what? It was like a week ago where it was, man, Kellen looked about as good as he's ever looked as a quarterback in the NFL. Just look calm, comfortable, you know, collected, doing his short passes the way you're supposed to do them. This game was just a lot more of a struggle. I mean, the completion percentage wasn't where you want it to be. The completions that he made were all within, like, I think, was it 7 yards or something like that? There wasn't anything that was down the field. You're seeing tweets about Kellen Moore is hurting the development of every receiver, tight end that he plays with. A tweet from a Roto World tweet basically saying that Kellen Moore is the lower class of backups. Like, there's a lot of bad backups in the league, and Kellen Moore shouldn't even be a backup quarterback. So it really is a drastic change, and to the point of, like, how bad do you have to look for it to go from one week of, he's pretty respectable out there, and he's doing a decent job, to he doesn't belong anymore?
One of the, from Roto World, was Stoneworth's least talented quarterback.
Jeez.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Like, I mean, what do It can't be that bad.
But here's the thing, isn't it, that because so many of the good players, the front line, the A players that you want to see play are not in there. I think a lot of this is that fans, pundits, etc., are looking for things to make drastic statements about. So hot takes. Let's pick on whoever's not doing well. And remember the old saying, the backup quarterback is the most popular person on the team. Well, if the backup quarterback is sitting in the starting role, maybe the third guy, i.e. Cooper Rush, is now the most popular player on the team.
And he'd play better, I suppose. By the way, I found this Kellen Moore tweet. Let me read this one just because I find it funny. Watching Kellen Moore play quarterback is like taking a bite out of something, expecting ranch dressing, and it turns out to be blue cheese. I mean, just saying, like, everybody is a comic. Everybody's got their jokes. But, yeah, apparently this Cooper Rush third string, he's bigger. I saw the one touchdown pass he threw to Gathers, the man that Moore threw the touchdown to in week one. A tight end, by the way. I don't know if he's going to make the team or not, but like, I'm trying to find a way to get that guy on the team. That dude's a monster. But, yeah, he floated it up there and, you know, he had the height and a nice arc to it, but like I saw Moore do that in the first game of the preseason. So, like, and I'm one of the people who am saying that, like, I don't know if Kellen Moore is a long-term backup. Like, if you need somebody to finish a game, he might be able to do that. If you need somebody to be a valuable resource in the locker room, he might be the best at that. Like, again, the stories about the film, he's weeks ahead, he's helping scout, he's helping Dak Prescott learn all these things. So, like, there's certainly value for him being there. But, like, I said even after he played well last week that if the Cowboys had a situation where they had multiple weeks of needing a backup quarterback, it's hard for me to believe that Jerry Jones would stake his season in, even though Jerry Jones keeps saying good things, like his quotes of saying Kellen Moore has that it factor, it keeps coming there, but just knowing Jerry Jones's reputation, it's hard for me to believe that he'll leave a large chunk of this season into Kellen Moore's hands playing quarterback, somebody who's very smart but still physically limited, and you can see it at times when he struggles in the preseasons.
You're listening to Idaho Sports Talk. Bob and Chris here until 3. Caves and Prater will take over at 3, and they'll bring you home till 6. Coming up at 1:15 today, we'll delve more into the first week of NFL preseason. Mike Renner, Pro Football Focus, is going to help us break down some of the performances of the Boise State players in week one of the preseason. Ask him about Kellen Moore. Week zero to week one, certainly people would say the first one was a little bit stronger performance. But looking at the way the NFL preseason works, the one thing that I think you can't factor in, unless you are just so knowledgeable and so on top of things, is who you're playing with. Is said quarterback Kellen Moore playing with the ones or the twos or the threes? And who are they going against?
Yeah.
Because maybe Cooper Rush looked good against guys that'll be working as extras on a Hollywood lot for the Rams as opposed to playing for the Rams when the season starts.
Yeah, but like what you can do is kind of rely on people that you trust evaluating talent to kind of at least tell you a story. Like, you know, Mike Lombardi, who's somebody who's been in an NFL front office before, he now works for the Ringer. And like when he tweets something like, if I'm a Cowboys fan, I'm nervous about a backup behind Dak, Kellen Moore ain't it. Well, like, I'm more willing to listen to, like, this is where I have to rely on analysts. And, like, before the show, I was watching some of the Giants highlights from their game against the Steelers, and Dante Dion was on the field for a play that where there was a touchdown allowed. The Steelers scored on a passing touchdown that was on the side of the field that Dante Dion lined up on. But I don't know what the scheme of that defense was, so how am I really supposed to say whether part of the responsibility was Dante Dion or part of it wasn't, and he had nothing to do with the fact that that touchdown was given up. What I can see is when he fumbles a punt, and that's something that we can all get on. And like when Kellen Moore, even if he were to throw an interception, and turnovers weren't exactly the thing in this, it was just being limited in the passing game, we can see the result in interception, but we don't know what went into an interception. So like that's when you really have to rely on the people who have made these talent evaluations at the professional level.
It sure looked to me, based on the number of plays that he got, that Dante Dion was given a very good chance to play this weekend for the New York Giants. I agree with you. Hard to say. I watched the same play with you, and we're trying to figure out whose responsibility is whose. There were three receivers for the Steelers on his side of the field. You know, was he supposed to be in a zone? Was he supposed to be in man? We'd need somebody like Ashley Ambrose, who played in the NFL, to kind of look and say, no, the Giants were in this, and he should have had that. I have no idea. It looked like he's kind of covering something underneath. The pass goes deep down the field for a Steeler touchdown. Now, as you mentioned about a fumble punt, fumbling punts and fumbling kickoffs are quick ways to get pink slips.
Yeah, but the thing is, would he ever have the responsibility of returning kicks if it were, like, we talked to people who cover the Giants, and it really never came up that Dante Dion was in a mix for as a returner spot. Now, I know he did it here, but, like, I never really noticed that that was something that the Giants were evaluating for him, and then all of a sudden he's back there and then he fumbles it. So if you get the opportunity, I guess it's better to not fumble it than to fumble it. But I don't know whether he makes the team or not will have to do with his ability to return on special teams. I thought it was, like, the reports we hear, his coverage, especially as a slot corner. So how will his coverage as a slot corner compare to what the Giants evaluate him on? A, you know, special teams we heard are important, but I was thinking more of like coverage special teams than I was thinking actually returning the kicks.
So we'll see if that moves forward next year. Maybe the person that was doing the punt returns or the one they, you know, are scheduling to, maybe didn't play.
Yeah.
So they were looking for somebody else. Perhaps maybe the biggest news over the weekend, a late game on Saturday night featured the Chiefs and the 49ers. Chancellor James missing practice today for the 49ers, reported by the Sacramento Bee. They claim that he has an ACL tear. Or a partial ACL tear, and probably not good for him if that's the case.
It's just another one, right? Like, you know, Billy Winn and his ACL tear, and that being something that you just shake your head at and think, like, man, in these first preseason games, like, when you do all this work to get to the spot where you can actually play in live games, and then, you know, whether it's in the game or right after the game in one of the practices that you get hurt, it's just, like, you just can only shake your head and be like, man, how tough of a spot is that? You put in all the work, and once you actually get to a chance where you can prove your work, you are in a position where you can't prove your work.
Preseason games sometimes tell the story, sometimes they don't. My biggest concern coming out of week one has nothing to do with anything on the field.
Real.
My biggest concern out of week one in the preseason is, did San Diego make a mistake moving to L.A.? They only sold 21,000 seats to their game with Seattle, exhibition game number one.
And it sounded like they played it in a soccer stadium, and it kind of sounded like a soccer crowd. I was just tuning into a little bit of that, and you could, like, hear the whistling and odd thing. Like, it didn't feel like a football game. And it actually took me a moment to realize that these weren't the San Diego Chargers anymore. Like, they had the same jerseys. They looked the same. Phillip Rivers is still there. Antonio Gates is still there. They're still connecting on touchdowns. And I'm like, something feels different. Wait, this isn't Qualcomm Stadium. So it took me a half a beat, and then it made sense because the crowd sounded like it was something out of a soccer game. That would be concerning. I think a lot of people are looking at, like, who's standing and who's kneeling for the national anthem, and that's been a thing for the preseason for the second straight year. It's really just hard to the Chargers look good on their first drive. I'm starting to freak out about fantasy football rankings, and then I'm realizing that it's preseason, and I probably shouldn't do that. So, like, as soon as we actually want to make a big deal out of something that happens, you do realize that it's preseason football.
Where do you take any kind of stock? Week three, did you put any kind of stock in what you see week three? Because week four is usually anybody that's playing is not going to be on the team usually. Yeah, well, I mean, week three, is that the only week you can take any kind of stock? Because, I mean, the colleges have never had preseason games, never had exhibition games. They jump right in. First game is a game that counts.
Yeah, and I feel like if my attitude with this is if you had an opinion going in week three of the preseason, your opinion was confirmed, you absolutely take it. And if your opinion was off base, you just say it was preseason, and it doesn't really matter. So it just depends. Do you see what you want to see, or do you not see what you want to see?
So it's sort of like the Emperor's New Clothes. Yeah. If you believe, you believe, right?
Yeah, that's like Summer League. If your boy balls out in Summer League in the NBA, it's like, yeah, I told you so. If he doesn't, hey, it's just Summer League.
Right now, call 208-424-9300. Be the third caller to win a gift card from Beef O'Brady's. Get to Beef O'Brady's at the northwest corner of Overland and Eagle to score lunch or dinner. It's Beef's for business lunches, sports watch parties, or friends and family. They have an award-winning menu with huge video wall and big-screen TVs. JP approves it. Beef O'Brady's in Meridian. Good food, good sports. More talk on NFL preseason. Mike Renner of Pro Football Focus breaks it down for us next. Is Kellen Moore in trouble in Dallas, or is it much ado about nothing? Next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Trying to reach Pro Football Focus is Mike Renner, so hopefully he will join us here in a matter of minutes. NFL preseason week one is in the books. Again, not a whole lot of stars played. I think I saw most starting quarterbacks, if they played at all, Chris, seemed to have one series. A lot of 3-for-4s and statistics that were worth maybe 40 yards or something.
Yeah, just get some work in, work off a sweat, and then put on the baseball cap, sit on the sidelines. And it's always kind of fun to watch they sometimes show the reactions of the starting quarterback when something happens. Like, some of them are just real into it. Some of them are just like chilling, relaxing, and really not paying as much attention. But who was it? Aaron Rodgers, when they were playing the Eagles, when it might have been Taysom Hill when he threw a touchdown pass. Yeah, it was. It was when Taysom Hill threw a touchdown. Aaron Rodgers was the one on the sidelines just completely flipping out. So, like, that's kind of cool to see, you know, when the vets who probably could take it or leave it. They don't really even want to be here in preseason week one, and they're having a fun time seeing their fourth, fifth string quarterback have a good game.
I remember when I was a kid, Chris, 6 games in the preseason.
That's ridiculous.
Exactly. I'm not so sure 4 is not too many.
Yeah, I think we've gotten to the point where the NFL themselves have admitted that 4 is too many, and they want to extend the regular season, right? And the one way you do it is you sort in the preseason, but you'll still hear the executives and people who are in charge of making decisions for teams. Like, they'll say that you need 4 preseason games to really determine. And my thing is, like, if you were to play in college, for example, like, while week one of college football might not be the smoothest week you'll ever see, they're able to do it. Mm-hmm. They're able to play. They're able
same
to have
for
a game.
Both teams.
Yeah, they're the same for both teams. You have a competitive football game. Sometimes you do have some of the better moments of the season early, and it doesn't fall apart. So, like, my whole thing with that is if college players can do it with the limited college schedules that they are able to put in, like NFL, you would think professionals would be able to, especially the starters, be able to do it without any preseason. So if you use the 2 preseason games to just solely look at backups, you think the starters could be ready for week one without having to go through the preseason rep? I think so.
Sure they could. I think the biggest problem the NFL has is that the league, the teams, the owners need 10 gates. And if you're going to eliminate preseason games, they certainly want to make the regular season longer. Now, the players' union's not going to buy that, or certainly not buy that without a lot of concessions or bones thrown to them. But, you know, let's say you had 2 preseason weeks. They're just not going to allow them to change 2 preseason weeks for 2 regular season games. I mean, you're going to get a lot more money from TV if the last 2 weeks of August, or the last week of August and Labor Day weekend, now become real NFL games, and we take this thing to 18 weeks, then you're going to get if you got 4 preseason games.
That's the thing. Like, at a certain point, like 18 games is probably too many, right? Like, in the climate of everything we know about how dangerous it is to play football and the debate on whether you're going to let your kids play it, like, we know how dangerous the game can be. Not saying it is, but, like, it can be that if you have a certain injury or repeated head injuries. So, like, can you realistically be able to put out the idea of now we want your starters to play 18 full games instead of the 16 plus whatever you guys want to do in the preseason? That's the thing with running backs, like the Adrian Petersons of the world when he was in his prime, LaDainian Tomlinson. Like, you could make the case that, you know, preseason was not necessary for them. They didn't play at all in a bunch of those preseasons, and the 16 regular season games plus playoffs is what they considered to be efficient. Once you started to change that to 18, I don't know how that would affect the game. Like, would it make sense to even give somebody an off week during an 18-game regular season if you think that they would better last themselves for that stretch run of the playoffs? So it'd be interesting to see how they would attack something like that. I don't think they'll ever come to the part. I just don't think the NFL offices can really make a compelling case to the NFLPA and give them enough for them to sign off on it.
I've always believed the NFL needs to be about fairness. They always talk about this being a parity league. I think the NFL needs to work their schedule so that if I have a bye week, you have a bye week if we're going to play next week. If I have a short week, no. You have a short week. If you go to a 17-game schedule, odd numbers, the first thing everybody's going to scream, somebody's going to get 9 home games, yeah. Somebody's going to get 8. Why not make the odd number game a neutral site game? Have every team play a game in Europe or in some other city in the United States that maybe you're trying to showcase for, you know, an NFL game. Maybe you give St. Louis a game. Maybe you give San Diego a game. Maybe you give Boise, Idaho a game. I don't know. Yeah. Different places, games. And everybody has one of those, because I think the idea of going to an 18-game schedule is way too long.
Yeah.
Way too long.
Unrealistic. I think, like, at 17, can you sell that? Like, knowing everything you know, can you tell these guys, you know what, one more. Like, by the end of the year, you're dealing with, like, Kellen Moore a couple of years ago starting a couple of games, and that was fun for us. But, like, tell that to the national television networks. Like, tell that to Fox and all the areas except Boise, whether they wanted, you know, the Cowboys to have a better chance of having a healthy roster at the end of the year or having Kellen Moore be the starting quarterback at the end of the year. And the Ryan Lindley's of the world who had to start a playoff game. So, like, the longer you do this, the longer you extend the regular season, the better chance you're going to have for a lot of these kind of dreck at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. Like, by the end of the NFL regular season, a good chunk of the games are still meaningful because of the fact that there's only 16 of them. But you do have some teams that are just like the Jets. Like, right now. Like, the Jets right now, it's a roster that looks like a Week 16 roster of a non-competitive team.
But at the end of the season, those teams that are out of the mix are going to get brushed under the carpet. You're going to see them in their local market, and that's it. So if the Cowboys are playing the Giants for first place in the next to the last week of the season, 90% of the country is going to get that. And if you're an NFC team, let's say Tampa Bay is at the bottom of their league, you know, they're going to get shown in Central Florida and wherever the other team, let's say they're playing the Bears, another bad team, you're going to get shown in Central Florida and Illinois, and that's it.
But you can't flex Thursday night and you can't flex Monday night. Like, those schedules are in place. So if you have a bad Thursday night matchup of backup quarterback versus backup quarterback and two teams that were clearly worn down, like, that's not changed. You can't do anything to your national television schedule to replace that. Same with Monday Night Football until they put something in that can change, but you can't do that because people plan their schedules accordingly. Like, you can't change a Monday game to a Sunday and change a Sunday game to a Monday and deem that acceptable to the viewing public because they've based their lives around their team's schedule.
Oh, no, and I think the bigger problem is I don't think you can do it based on ticket sales. Imagine if you are trying to go to the Cowboys and the Giants in New York, let's say, just picking those out. And you've bought your plane ticket, and you figure the game's scheduled for Sunday. Now, you got to be careful late in the season because you might think it's a 1 o'clock game. Oh, I'll get a night flight out. I'll be back on Monday. No, because it goes at 8 o'clock. You've got to be ready to come back on Monday to a certain extent, where I think that you will never see them move dates. I just don't think it's possible.
So if you're not moving dates and you're trying to extend the regular season, I just think, again, you're going to run into as the NFL, you don't have enough to give to the NFLPA to deem that acceptable. What, like free drug? You're no, we're no longer drug testing you. You can smoke all the marijuana you want. Like, I don't, what does the NFL have to give to the NFLPA to
the entire gate for the 17th game?
Yeah, I guess you
something
keep,
like that. Which they wouldn't want to give.
Is it like 55?
Isn't it 50 something, 40 something on the gross?
Yeah, so maybe you can weigh that in a certain way where, okay, now the players will accept a 17th game or an 18th game, but. What about
aside
owners?
From guaranteed contracts?
I guess they could give that, right? But I still don't think.
But I don't think they're going to. That's not the NFL's business model. They're not going to do that.
And I still don't think guaranteed contracts actually is a good thing for NFL players because I don't. I think the contracts would be so small. Like, no owner is going to really sign up for these four or five year deals worth like $70 million. Like, I don't think they would come if there were guaranteed contracts in the NFL because too many teams would not want to be on the hook for an injured player. So you'd see a lot of short term deals. That's why I actually think the NFL contract structure, like with the signing bonus. That actually makes a lot of sense where you get a lot of the money up front, and then it's almost a year-by-year thing because as an NFL player, it really is a year-by-year thing of whether you can still perform for the team. So it does look unfair on its face, but if the signing bonus is attractive enough, that kind of does make up for the lack of guarantee.
My biggest problem with the way the NFL does is I think if you do legitimately get hurt, you are not saved. Mm-hmm. Where if you get hurt in other sports, you're going to get every penny. So I think that that's where the biggest problem that the NFL Players Association has in a situation where there are more players that probably get hurt in the NFL than either of the other sports probably combined. I think it's a difficult one for the owners and the players because, as you say, Chris, I agree with you. If they made everything guaranteed, I think you'd see a lot of one-year deals. Are you headed into the Optimus Football Jamboree at Albertson Stadium on Saturday? Tune in to Sports Radio The Ticket for our live coverage. It'll begin at 9 and go through noon with JP, and it's all brought to you by Domino's. Results, interviews from the Optimus Jamboree, Saturday from 9 to noon on your FM home for Boise State Football, Sports Radio The Ticket. Fish, we've got a sports update coming up next. What's in it today?
Well, several Broncos were in action in their professional sports over the weekend, and the best performance didn't come on the football field. It came on the golf course. Plus, LeVar Ball is going to need a new tagline. He is no longer undefeated. That's coming up next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
The Ticket Sports Update.
This Ticket Sports Update is sponsored by Idaho Foot and Ankle Associates in Boise Meridian and Nampa. They measure success 1 foot at a time. Well, in a second preseason start, former Boise State quarterback Kellen Moore, not as sharp as he was in his debut. Moore, who again played the entire first half for the Cowboys, this time only went 8 of 17 for 69 yards, managing to lead the Cowboys only to a field goal and an eventual 13-10 loss to the Rams. Meanwhile, third-string quarterback Cooper Rush, 9 of 11, 104 yards, and led the Cowboys on their only touchdown drive.
Elliott didn't play, right?
No.
He won't be playing in the regular
season.
Well, no,
either. I understand that. But, I mean, in this game, they're not trying to squeeze some of their money out of him. But sometimes it's hard to tell. I mean, no, he did not have a good game. Kellen Moore did not. But who are you playing with and who are you playing against, I think, a big factor.
Yeah, this wasn't the opportunity that we thought would be coming at some point in the preseason where he's getting a chance to work with a lot of the first team. And I don't know if you're going to play Zeke in the preseason anyway, so we're probably will never see Kellen Moore with Zeke unless Dak Prescott gets hurt after week 6 when, you know, Ezekiel Elliott can come back. So it wasn't good. The jokes were there, and as a Boise State fan, you never want to hear those jokes. Like, that just, it kind of hurts, right? When somebody's joking about a third-string quarterback somewhere else, you can just, you know, be along for the ride. When somebody jokes about your brother, now all of a sudden you take it a little personal, you want to do something about it. That's kind of what get the feeling it was like for a lot of the Boise State fans. All right, these jokes are about my brother right now. That I will take this a little bit more personal.
But guys, I think it goes deeper from the Cowboy perspective. I think the line forms to the right. I'd be concerned that you look poor against the Rams, period.
Well, bad news for another Bronco who was in action this weekend. Chancellor James, according to Matt Miyako of NBC Sports Bay Area, one has been waived by the 49ers, and that is because he suffered a season-ending ACL injury to his knee. By being waived by the 49ers, if no one claims him, he'll go back to the 49ers injured reserve, but no season for Chancellor James. He is out for the year with an ACL injury.
It's a shame, too. I mean, they've put it up, their beat reporters have put it up on their page quite a bit that, like, you know, Chancellor James has been playing pretty well in their camp. So for him to have it come with an injury, what can you do to turn the injury settings off? It's just really disappointing when you're either fighting for a job or you're a vet who's been in it for a while, no matter what it is. Like, you get hurt before these things even count. I don't know what to do. It's just disappointing. Like, sometimes the Dak Prescott emerges from it, but generally you feel bad for the Tony Romos of the world who get hurt before the games count.
And I'm going to go back to Pro Day in the early spring, back late March, early April. I thought Chancellor James looked fantastic. I mean, I had to, like, do a double take and ask, is that Chancellor James? Because I thought he was in such good shape. And I'd heard great things coming out of 49er camp that he really put himself in a good position. So, to me, a total shame that Chancellor's hurt.
There was some good news for former Bronco athletes on the golf course, though. While Justin Thomas claimed his first major victory yesterday at the PGA Championship, beating a final round 300 par and winning by two strokes, former Boise State golfer Graham Dillette finished in a tie for seventh, thanks in part to shooting 500 par on the weekend, including a four-hole stretch, where at one point Graham Dillette was four over par. He's going to show up for the weekend. He shot six under par, going birdie, eagle, eagle, birdie, including two near hole-in-ones. But jumped him into the top 10. He finished tied for 7th, which one guarantees he gets to participate in the 2018 PGA Championship, and he gets to bring home a nice $317,000.
Smooth. That's nice. Congratulations there. That's well done, especially making it happen late Saturday. Now, you mentioned Justin Thomas winning. Before we get to Bob's take on former Boise State Bronco golfer, I just want to... The odds of this. All four major winners this year... Six letters in their first name, six letters in their last name. Sergio Garcia, Brooks Koepka, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, each of them, six letters in the first name, six letters in the last name.
You have too much time on your hands.
I mean, it wasn't me who came up with this. You think I'm smart enough to realize that?
Whoever had that, was that JP who came up with that? That's just a lot.
Who had Thomas? Was person who win have Thomas or not?
I don't think the final scores have been posted yet. I think they were winning at the time. Thomas was a mid-second round pick, so no, I didn't miss out. And Chris, Brooks Koepka only beat McIlroy by one stroke. So I only lost one stroke on Brooks Koepka. He kind of choked after you were rubbing it in my face.
Yeah, but you messed up the rhythm that you would have had if you would have picked Brooks Koepka. By the way, Ricky Fowler is also a 6-6 guy.
Well, he didn't win this year in a major, did he?
He's the favorite for the Masters next year. Early favorite. Apparently, you got to have 6-6.
And it seems like a different person wins just about every time.
Right.
Chip Spieth over at the British.
Yeah. What was the streak before Spieth? Was it like 12
I believe
in
it
a
was
row?
Eight first-time winners. Okay. Now we have 9-10 with Spieth because
gotcha.
Thomas was a first-time winner. I'll keep that in mind for the Masters, Chris. 6-6.
Mm-hmm. And young guys are winning a lot, too. There's a lot of guys under 30 that have been winning these days.
Well, speaking of guys over 30, LeVar Ball was in competition this weekend. He took place in the Big Three League's four-point contest against founder Ice Cube. The two have been going back and forth on social media. Ice Cube saying he would buy 10 pairs of ZO2s if he lost. Well, LeVar fell in a rousing showcase 2-1 at the Staples Center. And he was the only one that was upset this weekend and made the biggest headlines. Rookie Lonzo Ball was upset and threatened to boycott the NBA's latest 2K game after a picture showing Hawks rookie John Collins dunking on his teammate Brandon Ingram came out with Collins' rating of 73 overall. Lonzo then tweeted out, 2K, you got 24 hours to change this pick before you lose a customer. Collins, for some reason, not 2K, tweeted out a picture of Ingram dunking on himself. However, Ball still not happy. Brandon Ingram a 76 overall.
All right, so let's take this one story at a time here. LeVar Ball versus Ice Cube in a four-point shootout. Like, whose uncle at the barbecue versus somebody else's uncle at the barbecue?
2-1 finish.
How many shots did each of them take?
Tonight. It actually airs tonight on Fox, so we'll have to wait.
I think that they might, if they have a one-on-one game in the gym and put 20 minutes on the clock, it might be 6-5.
2-1 might be the final score.
So, like, I mean, that's LeVar Ball being fun, I guess. Like, you know, I'm willing to live with that. Sometimes he crosses the line of fun versus
I was watching
offensive.
The highlights. He was, like, they had the little four-point marker where they have it on the court. He was taking it from, like, 5 feet behind it for some reason.
Kind of real ballers.
Like, Ice Cube would shoot, and then instead of going forward, he'd just shoot over Ice Cube and airball it. And I was like, what?
Okay, yeah, that doesn't sound like the smartest
decision.
We'll
have to watch the whole thing tonight, though. I'm curious to see how bad he looked.
Now, you, of course, will give me the whole play-by-play of
it.
I don't have to worry about that. Now, the second story, with Lonzo being upset about some 2K rating, I'm upset with Lonzo Ball, and I don't even know if this is Lonzo Ball's fault, but I don't know if you guys saw the Friday there was a rookie photo shoot in the NBA.
Yeah, the best rookie was the centerpiece.
And they have a big old group photo for the rookie class. Front and center in this is always, you know, the guy who's the first pick in the draft. Front and center holding the basketball. This is your rookie class. You're the first pick in the draft. They have Lonzo Ball as the front center rookie holding the basketball. Markelle Fultz off to the side next to him. Hello? That's about as disrespectful as could be. The number one pick of the draft was Markelle Fultz. It wasn't Lonzo Ball. I know Ball gets a lot of hype. I know his dad's nuts. But he wasn't the first pick of the draft. That was Markelle Fultz. Fultz didn't look too happy about it, but he is not a guy who smiles much anyway.
That picture was so confusing. There's a Pelican in the first row. The Pelicans didn't have a first-round pick. Can't we just put them in, like, if you want to have Fultz be the middle guy, shouldn't they go in order? Shouldn't the first-round guys be in the front and the second-round guys be in the back?
Well, you gotta arrange it because of height at a certain point, right? Like, you can't...
Well, you can have a riser.
The guy who's, like, two to the right of Lonzo, and he was the 53rd pick.
It's almost like just, we're going to get a group photo. Sit, stand wherever you want.
Yeah. Put some chairs if they're short.
Front and center matters. Front and center matters. Yeah. Number one picks front and center. No. It's always that way, except suddenly Lonzo Ball... He wasn't the number one pick, man.
It's forecast.
More disrespect. Remember what 2K did? Lonzo Ball is the same rating as Markelle Fultz. The number one pick is always the highest rated rookie. It's not some number two pick that's tied with the number one pick. It's so much disrespect.
Just a forecasting of rookie of the year, Chris Lewis. Maybe he should have a better dad. Markelle Fultz's dad needs more boisterous. Well, bad news for the University of Florida. They'll be missing a handful of players for their week one opener against Michigan. The university announced that 7 players, including top wide receiver Antonio Callaway, have been suspended for the game through making improper charges on their student ID cards at the school bookstore and then selling those items back for cash. That's according to ESPN. It's been reported by some sources that the cards didn't even have enough money when they were used to purchase them, and others are reporting the school is going to make the athletes pay back the money that they used for the items, but it's unclear if there'll be any other punishment.
Well, first of all, if the school doesn't keep track of how much money is supposedly on somebody's ID card, that's dumb on them. I mean, because that could be any student, whether it's an athlete or not. So you wonder how often Florida probably has 35,000, 40,000 students. You wonder how many times that has been used, whether people get caught. But shame on the athletes for doing that.
Yeah, it's funny how this actually kind of came out as early as it did, too. Like, usually these things... A day before the game or a couple of days before the game, oh, there's all these suspensions that are listed. This one, a lot of time ahead. But again, this was at least a little bit more public, it seemed, than a lot of the, you know, off-season suspensions where you learn about it, like, you know, literally a day before the game.
You also wonder, too, if you know you're not going to have these guys for the opener, do you move those guys to scout team for the time being?
Yeah, why not?
So maybe people notice that.
I believe they also said they were going to miss the practices, too, so that's what the coach said. And we'll end the sports update by saying the NBA full schedule set to be released today at 4 p.m.
Woo! Sixers on a bunch of national TV games this year.
Probably. You're just looking for that Sixers-Lakers game, aren't you?
Yeah, what day? Ooh, yeah, that's a good one. That's what I want to search it for.
Probably someday Chris is on a plane and we'll have to miss it.
Probably. I want to record all the games, though, this year, making sure I don't miss one, recording them all.
Quick Hits is coming up next for Chris and I. We'll tackle 4 topics in rapid-fire fashion, including the most embarrassing thing for a general manager and who's to blame for Bryce Harper's injury. That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Quick Hits with Bob and Chris. Topic number one.
All right, Chris, what's the most embarrassing thing that can happen to a GM?
You trade up for a kicker in the second round, and then you have to cut him before he even plays a game in his second season. That's what the Buccaneers, Jason Lick, their general manager, that's what they had to do. He had to release Roberto Aguayo. Now, it was a bold move, I guess, to trade up for a kicker of all positions in the second round. We usually think kickers, why would you even draft a kicker? Nevertheless, trade up for one. Nevertheless, in the second round, then he ended up being pretty bad in the first season. Just made 71% of his field goal attempts as a rookie, 22 for 31. He missed a handful of extra points as well. Then in the preseason, what did he do? He missed an extra point. He missed a 47-yard field goal. And they said, man, we can't handle this anymore. So question is, like, what happened here? Like, was this a misevaluation on his physical ability to make kicks. I don't think that was it. Was it just not reading him mentally as somebody who can handle the pressure of being a kicker? So you really have to go into self-reflection mode. But generally, like, you better have a very good record as a GM to be able to get away with a mistake like this. There's one thing to admit it a year later, but that still doesn't change the fact that you traded a couple of picks and used your pick as a second rounder where there's other quality players available, and you picked a kicker of all positions who failed. You can't get that kicker pick wrong. And he did.
What happens if he goes to the Bears, and the Bears did pick him up off waivers, and ends up being the kicker that Tampa thought he would be?
I don't know. Would that make the GM smarter?
I think it would make the coaching staff look terrible.
Because you couldn't coach him to make kicks?
I don't know. I'm just saying. I don't think he's going to end up being all that in a bag of chips for the Bears, but what if he is?
If he is, then I think Jason Licht is proven right then. I think he should be rooting for Aguayo to somehow turn it around and be an excellent
special
kicker.
Teams coach better hope not.
Yeah, the special teams coach is like, he better fail wherever he goes, and he's just a mentally fragile guy, and he can't handle it, or else you look bad as a special teams coach. But from the GM's perspective, you can't have this guy just flame out of the NFL and have it look good on your resume. Like, it's better if he just somehow turns it around with Chicago. At least you can say, that's what I saw. That's why I traded up for him.
Topic number two.
What was your take on the Red Sox-Yankees series over the weekend?
Great baseball, especially the late inning. So many moves. But my biggest takes are the days of Jeter and Poppy are gone. There are a lot of fresh faces on both of these teams. Guys like Judge and Sanchez and Treyas and Hicks for the Yankees, Betts, Benintendi and Bradley, and Leon at catcher for the Red Sox. So there's a lot of new faces if we're going to watch the Red Sox and the Yankees battle down the wire for the American League East. But the biggest take I had, Aroldis Chapman is not the Aroldis Chapman of last year. If this Aroldis Chapman had pitched for the Cubs wouldn't be World Series champs. He blew games both Friday and Sunday. The Friday game, fortunately for him, the Yankees were able to come back and win. Despite him, he was awful on Sunday. The Yankees have to shore up the back end of their bullpen if they want to run down the Red Sox.
Yeah, I mean, Yankees have a 20-run differential better than the Red Sox. They're a plus 110. The Red Sox are a plus 90, but you're 5.5 back behind them, and a lot of it does have to do with you're not really good in close games. Your bullpen does blow a lot of games that your team probably should win. So, like, run differential usually plays out in the long run. You're running out of time for the Yankees to, I mean, there's still a decent chunk left, but unless they get a stretch of being able to hold a lot of the leads they get, they're going to fall behind the Red Sox and then be in this wild card picture, and it is tightly contested there, too.
Friday's game in the ninth inning after the Yankees have taken the lead, Chapman walked the bases loaded, and they got out of it and ended up winning the game thanks to a double play, some poor base running by the Red Sox. And then in the ninth and tenth inning, walked too many people. Also gave up a home run to a 20-year-old left-hander in his first at-bat against Chapman. Chapman better find it or the Yankees might be in trouble.
Topic number three.
Why could today shape the next college basketball season as well as the NBA draft?
Because Marvin Bagley is supposed to announce today where he wants to go to college. 6'10". Wing type player. I guess if you want to make the Kevin Durant comparison, go ahead and do it. A big wing who can do a lot of different things, who a lot of people said would have been the number one pick in this most recent draft if he was eligible. Technically, he wasn't eligible for the next draft either in 2018. He was somebody who was the high school class of 2018, which would mean he's the draft class of 2019. He's looking to reclassify, so he has to finish up some tests at school, and he has to basically fill in some paperwork to see if he can reclassify for the high school class of 2017 so he can be able to be in that draft class of 2018. And he's supposed to announce where he goes. Duke, I think, is considered to be the front runner for him. And if they get him eligible for next season, given what Duke is roster looks like right now, Duke will be the heavy favorite to win the national championship in college basketball. UCLA has a unique advantage here, though, because of the fact that they have the quarter system instead of semesters, that like the date for him to finish all the requirements is a little bit later, about a month later.
These quarters start like late September.
Yeah, September 25th, I think it's at UCLA, and the semesters, it's like mid-August. So there's a little bit of an advantage for UCLA in being able to have him, and they're, again, a team that has a lot of talent, too. So they would be a top-five team for sure if they're able to add in Marvin Bagley and him being able to play for next year. And then he'd probably be the NBA number one pick, either in 2018 or 2019, depending on this reclassification.
Let me just ask you, Joe Student decides he wants to graduate in the summer, right? Joe Student, you call Duke up, one of the toughest schools to get in the country. Joe Student get in late?
Probably not. because Joe Student all of a sudden grow to be 6'10 and hit a jump shot. If Joe Student could do that, then maybe all of a sudden he has a path to Duke. It's sometimes an advantage to be talented at basketball.
Topic number four.
Bryce Harper's injury. If you're going to blame somebody, who would it be?
The Nationals themselves. The Nationals, greedy. They rained their game out Friday night against the Giants. They told the teams over half an hour in advance of letting the fans know, forcing the fans to sit in there for a couple of hours and buy food before the game was canceled. For whatever reason, the Nationals didn't want to play the game Saturday afternoon. So they left the game Saturday night. That was the game that Harper was injured in. They decided to play two games on Sunday. Split admissions, meaning you pay for one, you pay for the other. 3-hour rain delay on Saturday. The game starts at after 10 o'clock. They complained the bases were slick, and that's why the injury was there. I'm saying the Nationals have to take some of the brunt of it because that's a game with a team that's ahead by 10 games, playing a team that's behind the standings by 30 games. That game should have been canceled Saturday night. But they didn't want to refund money. They wanted to force the people to pay.
I blame the Giants. I don't know why, but it's just more fun to see your reaction when I blame the Giants.
They and the Nationals have had some games over the years. Up next, should a quarterback be called a quarterback? Or should we change position names? That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Welcome back. Bob and Chris here. Football just around the corner. Boise State had its scrimmage on Thursday, so they're moving into another week that'll be concluded with another scrimmage. So we've got college football on the horizon. Few teams will play on Saturday the 26th, and most of the rest of the teams will get underway the weekend Boise State does on September the 2nd. One of the things that fans kind of just take for granted, Chris, is terminology in sports. And sometimes they go back so far, nobody has any idea of why something is called something. Like the bullpen in baseball.
Yeah, what's up with that?
It's been normally when somebody did it, it was on a field way, way back, probably in the 1870s, and there were either bulls there, or bulls used to be there, and that's where somebody warmed up. So that stays. But I don't think there's a sport, Chris, that has more names that don't make sense for positions and terminology than football.
Yeah, and this article on The Ringer sort of brought the attention to it. Danny Kelly wrote it, and the first description of kind of what he was trying to do. Positional distinctions are disappearing, rushing yards are losing meaning, and offensive-defensive schemes are shifting from game to game, if not drive to drive. The most popular sport in America is changing faster than it ever has before, yet the way we talk about the game has largely stayed the same. It's time for the conversation to catch up to the shifting concepts, redefining front offices and gameplay nationwide. And I just saw this and I thought, hey, like, this is something that's kind of down both of our lanes because we do play-by-play, we like to talk about things, and we both have the weird inquisitive mind of like wanting to know where everything started and wanted to know where everything came from. And while reading this article, it's like, he's right. Like, we call all these stuff a lot of old things that don't make any sense. Why don't we change the terminology of a lot of these positions? And for football, as you mentioned, Bob, that might be the place where you start. And it's not just a football thing. It's throughout sports. But football, with it being right around the corner, it's really in the spotlight.
Quarterback. Everybody knows what a quarterback does. If you stop somebody on the street and said, give me a definition of what a quarterback does, I think even people who are not real sports fans could probably come close you know, the guy that runs the football team on offense, throws the ball, maybe hands it off to the running back. I mean, but there's nothing in that description, quarterback, that would make you think that it has anything to do with throwing the football. And it came back from the old single wing days. They used to have a quarterback that would stand about a quarter of the way back, a halfback, which a lot of times they used to describe a tailback or a running back in today's vernacular, and then the fullback was all the way back. And when you watch single wings, and I one time had a chance to call a high school game in which one of the teams employed the single wing, they would snap the ball out of the shotgun to any one of the three guys in the backfield, so you didn't know where it was going
to
go.
That just seems like it was a mess, though. I don't want to go back to that. I haven't seen that in the NFL in forever. We had the Wildcat at some point, but that was its own unique thing. So quarterback goes back to a time where it just doesn't reflect what the terminology would be here. So if we were starting in 2017 and we wanted to name the positions today, there's no way we would call the quarterback the quarterback. We'd probably call it, like I wrote down, passer. Simple. But then again, they do a lot more than pass. But the ringer said shot caller is what you would call the quarterback today. If you're renaming the position.
And I think shot caller is a good name because if you think about it, the snap comes, whether it's under center or in the shotgun, and the quarterback, you can even maybe say decision maker as well, although probably a little bit longer than shot caller. But you know, in some of these spreads, you're deciding if you want to hand off to the offense or if it's an option team. You know, you're going to hand a dive to the fullback, or you're going to keep the ball, or you're going to pitch the ball, mm-hmm. or you're going to throw it down the field. Shot caller is probably a pretty good name for that person.
Decision maker, too. I like that. So let's move along. Running back, or halfback is what the original term was. And we still use halfback quite a bit, but again, if you're redefining, you're not calling it halfback. What is?
I find it interesting that in the old two back formation, a lot of times the fullback was the first guy, the halfback or the tailback was the second guy in the old I formation. Yeah. Yet in the old one, the fullback was all the way back. It should have been the opposite.
So we're confusing our audience is what we're doing, the way we named these positions the way we did. So instead of calling it the halfback, how about we call it the ground playmaker? The ringer said trucker. I don't like trucker because that implies a certain style that not all running backs have.
Unless certain guys might be a trucker.
Yeah, like Jerome Bettis, would be a trucker. But would you call Darren Sproles a trucker?
No.
So ground playmaker. Because there's a couple of ways to move the football. You either do the air or you do it on the ground. And he's the ground playmaker. He's the one who's making plays on the ground.
Okay. I was going to say even just if you wanted to go short of the runner.
The runner. But that's the thing. All positions run, though, in football. Mm-hmm. Like, the receivers run. The running back runs. The quarterback can run sometimes. So I just a little bit more specific. Ground playmaker. He makes plays on the ground.
But when you're using it then in the call and you're doing things short, you don't want to say, and so-and-so lines up as the ground, Madison is the ground playmaker.
The GP. Ground playmaker. Initialize it. You can work. You can make it work. Fullback. Ain't nothing full about fullback if you still use fullbacks. Lead blocker. That's all they do. Mm-hmm. That's all they do. They lead block. It's the lead blocker position.
Mm-hmm.
Got any complaints on that one?
I think that would be especially if they're in line in the I formation. Yeah. I've always sort of used the term wingback when they're sort of offset.
Gotcha. And the ringer said dozer. I like lead blocker. Receiver could stay. Receiver is a good name that fits. You receive the ball. You receive it from the quarterback.
And they changed that because originally, based on the rules of football, you have to have seven on the line. The two guys at the end were your eligible receivers. Mm-hmm. And that's how you got the term split end and tight end. You were a tight end if you were on the line. You were a split end if you were off. And the term split end is pretty much
gone.
That's gone. Wide receiver has pretty much taken its spot. So that's maybe one of the only positions where you'd say that it has morphed into a new name. And I would think that probably came about in the 70s would be my guess of when they went to receiver from end.
We've got wide receiver, inside receiver. That's how I would do it. Offensive lineman. That sounds way too, like, regal. Offensive lineman. Call them blockers. That's what they are. They're blocking. Call a blocker.
The one I don't understand. Center I can understand because you're at the center of the play. You're the one that's starting it, so I can live with center. Guard, I guess you're kind of guarding the quarterback, so I'll buy guard. But an offensive player is not allowed to tackle. So how do you get tackle at the end of the line? It's the two guys on the bookends of the five guys in the line. Yeah. How did that become the position called tackle? Now, it probably did in a two-way, when you used to have to play both ways, somebody that lined up in the line, you were a guard and you were a tackle on both sides because there was nose guard and there was defensive tackle. So I'm guessing that that's how they got it. Mm-hmm. But to me, that of the three positions in the offensive line is the one that doesn't make sense.
Why can't you just call them left blocker, the left mid, the center, the right mid, and the right blocker? Like, teaching people football and telling them where's the guard versus where's the tackle, like, that could turn into a if you just tell the left blocker, you're on the far left. Left mid, you're the one in the middle to the left. So much easier.
And what happens? And what happens if they go to an unbalanced line?
What happens if they go to an unbalanced line now? What do you call the extra lineman? Like, I don't even know.
Extra tackle.
You just usually call him extra.
Yeah. So the extra guy.
The extra guys out there. So I think that would be so much easier. Just get rid of the left guard, left tackle. Just describe them as left blockers. Now, when doing this exercise, like, that was the football offensive positions. I wanted to go to other sports, and it seemed like the one that really made sense, that's timeless, the position names were timeless, was baseball. Baseball got it right whenever they named these positions a gajillion million years ago.
And I think they probably did because I think the game has changed the least of any of the three games. The actual rules and what's happening.
The basemen play by the bases. The first baseman's near first base. The second baseman's near second base. The third baseman's near third base. And a base is where you're safe, so it makes sense. You call it a base because you're safe there. And then, in any kind of situation, your base, your home base, is where you're safe. The outfielders are playing in the field out there. And it makes sense.
Left field, center field, right field.
He's out in the field to the left. He's out in the field to the center. He's out in the field to the right. The catcher catches the ball. The pitcher pitches it. Like, it all makes sense. Why couldn't all the sports be as classic as baseball? Now, I guess the thing that can throw it off is if we see so many dramatic Joe Madden shifts all over the place. Basemen will no longer play by bases, but the basemen still have to play by bases. Like, you're still not going to have a game where, like, nobody's ever around second base. Mm-hmm. Now, shortstop, I don't really know what the deal is with shortstop.
And why did that person on that side of second get called shortstop and not the one on the other side? That'd be the only one that's a bit weird.
Designated hitters are designed to hit. The pinch hitters hitting the pinch. Mm-hmm. Like, baseball, they got it right. This is something that is timeless. It's something that is classic. And the position names make sense. Football, it's lost in translation. Baseball, still there. Basketball, nobody play. Like, the point guard, shooting guard, small forward, power forward, center. I just feel like the game in the college level and the NBA level, it's gotten to the point where, like, nobody is, defined by positions. Like, you have five guys on the court, and I think the best way to go about that was just call the position by the role they are. You have primary ball handler. Like, Kyrie could be that, or LeBron could be that. You have your scoring wing, your stretch big, your rim protector, your enforcer. Like, I think those make more sense than to just, like, label everybody by, like, he's a small forward. Well, the small forward can play shooting guard, can play power forward, and sometimes in the NBA now can play center.
And how many times when you talk with coaches and you're talking about, the lineup or where they're going to play it, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah.
Everybody knows 1's the point guard, 2 is sort of the off guard, 3 is the small forward, 4 would be the power forward, and 5, if you're playing with the true center, would be the center position. So I think the number is sometimes just about as evenly distributed. You can figure out what's happening because you know where the 1 goes. But if you're trying to come up with names that actually make sense, basketball, not too good. Football, very poor. Although the defensive side, I think a little better on the football side. Safety, corners, linebackers kind of back up the line, defensive line. I think they got it pretty well right on the defensive side. But the offensive side, they got to go back to the drawing board. Exclusive Boise State football training camp coverage is right here on your FM home of Boise State football. Download the Ticket app for interviews, opinions, and the latest camp news on Bronco football. Or tune in to Chris and me, Caves and Prater, during Idaho Sports Talk from 1 to 6. When news happens with Bronco football, it's always on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket. When we come back, the guy Chris wants updates on every day. Joel Velasquez met the media over the weekend. We'll hear what he says about trying to kick and punt and where he's at doing it. That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket. Bob and Chris back on Idaho Sports Talk. Tomorrow at this time, we will be visiting with Steve Schnall, who is the marketing director for San Diego State. We'll talk a little bit about their stadium situation, that they're trying to come up with something brand spanking new at the same location as Qualcomm. But the area we're going to talk with Steve about tomorrow at this time is, what is San Diego State trying to do to reach out to get Charger fans to be their fans?
Because it seems like they're using the one team, one city, or however. What's the exact wording they're using?
I think it's one town, one team, I think.
Yeah, so they're trying to play off of that. So is it working? And I'm sure they kind of want to be the main football show. And if they have the kind of season that a lot of people think, could maybe gain a little bit more steam than it would if the Chargers were in the area too or competing with football. So we'll get the lowdown on that tomorrow at this time.
We're going to San Diego State in the middle of October. I'll be interested in if they've done anything to dress up the stadium, because they're not going to have any paint or any placards and logos with the Chargers on it. I would think San Diego State probably took advantage of that and made it look more red and black than blue and gold.
Yeah, that was the one thing. The end zone still said San Diego, and maybe they kind of altered the color scheme a little bit to look more like San Diego State, but it still had a lot of a Chargers look to it when you watched it on TV, at least. I've never been there for a San Diego State game. You said dress up the stadium, though. From what I've heard, and you can
put lipstick on a pig.
Describe, what is the stadium? Why do people rip on that place so much? Al Michaels,
dump.
Whenever he has a national game there at Qualcomm, he would just destroy that thing.
I'll take a picture of the booth, and then you can decide.
Okay.
And then I'll take a picture of the locker rooms.
Well,
now,
that's not going to help the audience. You need to describe it for them.
San Diego State, well, the booth is cramped. There's wires all over. There's boxes, much like the box that that Yankee guy that's now with the A's ran into. At your feet. The locker rooms are cramped. My guess is that San Diego State would probably take the Chargers locker room now. They probably have upgraded. Whether the visitors moved, they were in the old Padres locker room.
Oh, really? Upgrade, yeah, you absolutely. When your brother moves out of the house, the older brother, you get to take the big room now. That's the best thing about it. I'm the oldest one, so I've never experienced this. From what I understand, when the older sibling moves out the house, the younger sibling gets to take over the big bedroom now.
And thank you for a great segue. We had Sean Whale and Tyler Rosso move out of the house this year. And that moves Joel Velasquez up. And Velasquez is going to try to replace both Whale and Rosso. Big shoes to fill. And he's the guy you said at the beginning of camp you would like to know how he's doing every day.
Most intriguing storyline to me, and it's not necessarily a storyline, like, follow it through. I just want to know if he's good or not, and that affects how you have to make decisions as a football team, and whether we want to disparage the importance of the kicker position or not, it matters because it directly relates to points, and the punter directly relates to field position. I rewind the clock to the Fiesta Bowl a couple seasons ago against Arizona. You can make the argument that Sean Whale was the MVP of that game. Mm-hmm. Like the way that they changed field position every time Boise State wasn't able to score was phenomenal. It was important in the Broncos winning that game. So I know Rosso had a down year last year relative to the amount of opportunities weren't there. But a couple of seasons ago, he was just a rocket. His leg was a rocket, and it was kicking them from distance and very accurately. So those are two players who had all conference capabilities for Boise State over the last couple of years. And if you're not as sharp there, I mean, we see it in an NFL Sunday all the time. Every time these teams miss an opportunity to get the guaranteed points. Now, an extra points in college are a lot easier than the extra points in the NFL. It will affect you. And we saw just recently, Roberto Aguayo, he was cut from the Tampa Bay Bucks because that probably cost them a playoff spot. They're a good enough team to make the playoffs, but their kicker kept messing up the opportunities that the team had to get points. If we think that Boise State's schedule is as challenging as we think it is, right? Like the first six and seven games, the margins will be slim. If you don't have a reliable player at that position, I'm not saying he's not reliable. I just don't know and haven't seen him. And that's why I want the updates from him. But if that position isn't reliable, that will hurt you in the short run and in the long run. So that's the logic behind my stance.
All right, let's go with, first of all, who is Joel Velasquez? He is a scholarship player. He sat out last year as a redshirt, although he did travel to all the away games to kind of get the feel and warm-ups. He was probably there as an insurance policy, in case Will or Rasa got hurt. He is from Mission Viejo, California. He is a three-star recruit, according to ESPN and Scout.com. He was selected All-CIF Southern Section Southwest Division as a punter and was named All-League First Team, and Orange County Register's All-County Third Team as a punter. So has a few more accolades as a punter, but was 35 out of 35 on extra points as a senior, 6 of 9 on field goals, not a lot. This, of course, in the 2015 season. But here's the one that I like. 41 of 54 kickoffs were touchbacks, averaged 39.4 yards a punt. I think you'd like to see that number go over 40 collegiately. That's a little bit about Joel Velasquez.
Yeah, and then also, you know, shot put discus, and you're that strong. How's it translate to leg power, too? So all those things kind of make up for, okay, we know about him. We know his background, well-decorated in California. But Roberto Aguayo was well-decorated going into the NFL, and you know, sometimes things happen. So let's see if we can even get a read in the camp. And we probably can't, but how reliable a guy could be.
Now, Kyle Brotzman did both when he was here, and he was actually named the all-blue kicker and punter. Had a chance over the weekend to get to know Velasquez a little bit better. We asked him the biggest challenge of doing both.
I guess the biggest challenge is on field goals and kickoffs. Your leg swing kind of comes around, whereas punting, everything's supposed to be a straight line. So kind of being able to separate both of those can be a little bit difficult. But, I mean, I'm just getting better each and every day and been doing it for a while. So
dang, experience doing it. It's just a matter of, like, is that ideal? I guess the thing you said, Brotzman did it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you
want? I think you're looking at this case, if you're Kent Riddle, the special teams coordinator, who we will hear from tomorrow. He's speaking after practice today. I think you're looking for whoever the best person is. And I don't think you – if the better person, like last year, if Ross is your best kicker and Will's your best punter, you split the job. But if you were going to have individual tryouts and say, who's our best kicker? And you watch the kicks and you see what they're doing, and it's Velasquez. And then you do the same thing. Who's our best punter? And it's Velasquez. Mm-hmm. Who's our best kickoff person? Who gets the most touchbacks? However they determine that in practice. I think you have to do it. The biggest thing that I worry about is his next answer, taking care of the leg. Because when you're kicking all of that in practice and in the game, it does take a toll.
Right. I mean, it comes down to practice. Like right now, we're kicking pretty often, just getting my leg feels good, feels in shape, and then also just get in the training room with a Spooner and all the other trainers, just keeping my legs fresh, cold tubbing, and all the other technology that they have in there.
A lot of people say, why do you have all these quarterbacks on the roster? Why do you have extra backup kickers on the roster? A lot of times you need it for practice, because if you want to practice kick and punt coverage and, you know, receivers and defensive coverage, you need people throwing the ball. Mm-hmm. And you don't want Brett Rypien or Joel Velasquez having to throw or kick everything during practice.
Yeah, but that's why I say, like, ideally, do you want it to be the same guy, or do you want it to be
You'd want two different guys.
Yeah. That's.
I mean, I don't think you're looking and saying, gee, we can save on a scholarship if one of the guys does both. I don't think you're in there. Now, you know, in the NFL, could you – if and they don't very rarely have somebody do both, but – I mean, I've never heard anybody say, well, we could save a roster spot on our group we suit up if we got the same guy doing both. You?
No, I mean, I look at it similar to, as odd as it sounds, like the Josh Rosen comments from last week, where he basically said, there's a limited amount of time. I could either be focusing on doing the stuff for classes to be get the degree in marketing and get good grades there. Or I could be spending the time on football and being a better quarterback. Can't you argue it's a similar logic when it comes to there's a limited amount of time that I can be working at football? Should I be spending all of that? If I have to split that time halfway between two, am I hurting myself of being as effective at one? Like if I spent all my time being a field goal kicker instead of worrying about punting, could I be an exponentially better field goal kicker? And same with punting. If I focused all my time on punting, could I be a significantly better punter than if I spent half my time on it?
I see where you're coming from, and I would think probably if somebody specialized, they would be better. But they still might not. They still might be better than whoever you have as your second person.
Yeah, so I guess it's like ideally versus where you are as a roster right now, like where Boise State is as a roster, he's the best guy at both. But like, I'd be interested, like, would they be looking, and we kind of already know some of the recruits for the next cycle, but like, would you within the next, because Velasquez, redshirt freshman here, we're talking 4 years, at some point down the line, would you try to add a punter or add a kicker and move Velasquez to one of the two, not having to do both?
I think it would probably depend on how well he's done and how well what you think you need. A lot of times, as you say, I think listening to that answer that he gave, I think he enjoys doing both. He's done both forever. Mm-hmm. Talked about where he is at in both categories, kicker and punter, where he thinks his strengths are and what he's working on.
Obviously, with punting, it's all about the drop, just trying to keep that drop consistent, that straight leg swing. Kicking, it's just about getting the consistent ball end over end rotation. And I feel pretty good right now.
If he feels good about it, he feels where he likes to be. But I would be interested to see, okay, where's that answer in November?
Mm-hmm.
After doing a full season of kicking, field goals, kicking off, punting, do you feel as sharp? And how did that compare if you got to split those?
No pun intended, but he has big shoes to fill in Whale and Rosson, right?
You got jokes.
Are you headed to the Optimus Football Jamboree at Albertson Stadium coming up on Saturday? You can tune into Sports Radio The Ticket for live coverage from 9 until noon with JP. It's brought to you by Domino's. Results and interviews from the Optimus Jamboree Saturday, 9 to noon, on your FM home of Boise State football, Sports Radio The Ticket. Fish, we got an update coming up. What's going to be in it?
Well, a bad end of the week one of the preseason for some former Broncos in the NFL. Plus, Tim Tebow might be in minor league baseball, but apparently his second coming is in the NFL right now. That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. And we'll start the Ticket Sports Update with some NFL news. There's a bad end to week one of the preseason for some former Boise State athletes of the NFL. Kellen Moore got his second start of the preseason, started the entire first half once again for the Cowboys. Not so well in his second game, 8 for 17, 69 yards, leading the Cowboys only to a field goal and eventually in an eventual 13-10 loss to the Rams. Meanwhile, his backup, third-string quarterback Cooper Rush, 9 of 11, 104 yards, and the Cowboys' only touchdown drive.
Now, the Cowboys will probably only keep two quarterbacks, right? This isn't a team that you would think would be able to go the route of the third guy. Unless, is Cooper Rush, like, practice squad eligible?
Maybe. Yes, they said he was. Okay. He was.
So they can still be able to keep him as a practice squad eligible player. So I don't think he would necessarily be a threat to Kellen Moore on the depth chart, as much as Kellen Moore having his position overtaken by a veteran if the Cowboys ever got into the position where they really needed a long-term backup. And that at this point, is Kellen Moore a veteran? Like I say, like overtaken by a veteran, but Kellen Moore has been in the NFL for a while.
I think the veteran, when somebody uses the term veteran, I think they mean somebody that's actually started and played games is what I think they mean.
Yeah, that's what
as
I meant
by that. As opposed to somebody who's, I mean, he's been in the league, what now, 5 or 6 years?
Yeah,
so,
like,
yeah, I mean, he's a veteran. Somebody that's been in the league, Jared Goff, let's say, is a one-year guy.
Exactly.
Moore would be definitely much more of a veteran. But when I hear somebody say veteran, to me the code word is somebody like a Jay Cutler or somebody that's started games for teams.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's very few of them still available. Of course, everybody knows Colin Kaepernick being one of the guys who's still available. But I guess that's the striking thing, and I think what is nerve-wracking because the Cowboys are such a high-profile team that even their preseason games get a lot of traction, a lot of social media traction, and it's like, if Kellen Moore keeps looking bad, and again, this is only one game. I thought he looked pretty good in the Hall of Fame game, but it's going to bring a point where, like, you know, Skip Bayless is out here tweeting about Kellen Moore. Like, that's this is not a place where you can hide.
Now, the Ravens, Bisciotti, the owner, had basically a town hall meeting and then what, asked people to pray for the organization, right?
Yeah.
Jerry Jones is not going to have a town hall meeting on who the backup quarterback is.
He'll be fine. I think Jerry Jones wouldn't really have any qualms about, like, bringing in somebody who's high profile and can get attention. Like, that's not what
I don't think Jerry Jones shies away from. I don't think Jerry Jones has qualms about anything. I think Jerry Jones is taking it at face value. I think he's confident in Kellen Moore as the number two quarterback right now. The question will be, if something happens to Dak Prescott, like happened to Kellen Moore and Tony Romo last year, that was in week three of the preseason.
Mm-hmm.
Prescott goes down, ask Jones the question again. I think that's when the answer really becomes important.
It's funny because I wouldn't have thought that Jerry Jones would have let Dak Prescott go out there and have that, like, the whole year of Dak being the quarterback. But the thing is, he had a good start to the preseason, so at least had some, all right, let's see what this kid can do. And then he never really played poorly, so just putting him out there.
They had no idea. You think they had any idea what they were getting?
No.
I don't think so.
Well, another Bronco went down in week one of the preseason, and he looks like he'll be out for the year. This time, Chancellor James suffered an ACL injury. It's been reported by NBC Sports Bay Area. He's been waived by the 49ers, and that he will miss the rest of the season with a right ACL tear. If he is not picked up on waivers, James will return to the San Francisco 49ers injury reserve list, but him and Billy Winn both going to miss the entire season after week one preseason injuries.
So let me ask what I think you're saying. They're waiving him right now. So another team can pick him up if they want. And they are liable for his contract being on IR, I would guess. So the chances of that happening for someone that's never played are pretty slim. Either way, though, because he's hurt, James is going to come up with his money through either the league paying him or workman's comp, correct?
I mean, that's what I believe. I haven't done like the background on this, but that would seem to make sense.
Yeah, and I can't believe that you'd get hurt on the job in work and then you get nothing. I can't believe you'd get nothing.
Correct. So,
if not, the players' union is really bad if you don't get anything.
You're looking at it from the money standpoint, I guess. Hey, at least Chancellor James gets something, but I'm looking at it from the opportunity standpoint of Dude was playing well, according to the beat reporters there. He was definitely making an impression, and now your chances to make impressions going forward just aren't there anymore. So that's what's disappointing about it.
Well, good news for one former Boise State athlete, Graham Dillette. Thanks in part to shooting 500 par on Saturday and Sunday, finished tied for 7th at the PGA Championship. Justin Thomas claimed his first major victory, winning the PGA Championship. But for Dillette, he walked away with $317,000 worth of prize money, and his top 10 finish guarantees he will be back next season for the 2018 PGA Championship.
There was one stretch, I think it was on Sunday, he went birdie, eagle, eagle, birdie, which is not bad.
That's how you play. So good for him, getting his name up there on the leaderboard. I just still... can't believe the 6-6 rule applied again. The major winners this year all had six letters in the first name, six letters in the last name. Odds of that.
Well, speaking of
odds, Chris, you would be 5-5.
I'd be a 5-5 guy.
Yeah.
So I need to add a letter to each of my names, and I can be an excellent
golfer. Chris with two S's on the back end.
Yes. Chris and Lewis with two S's.
I can try to really be bold and go Christ.
That's pretty bold. That's pretty bold. A little too bold. But speaking of your 6-6, Westgate's Las Vegas Superbook already released odds for the 2018 Masters in a 6-6. Right at the top, Chris Lewis, Jordan Spieth, 7-1. You're 6-6.
How long of a streak?
I don't think the 6-6 is the reason Jordan Spieth picked first.
Hey, Ricky Fowler, that's what I'm saying. He's next.
He's fifth best odds. There's a couple non-6-6s between him and Jordan Spieth.
So if I gave you the 6-6s versus the field, who are you getting?
I'm taking the 6-6ers. Spieth, Fowler, Koepka.
You want me just to say to JP and Prater that you're getting those three guys for your team?
I don't know if they'd agree with that.
Would you take them right now? How many guys you normally have?
You can only get 8. I would take the 4 of them. I think Spieth, Koepka, Fowler, Thomas. And I don't think JP would be very happy with that if I got
Prater
those 4 and they got 8.
Who's the other one? We're missing one in there, right?
Nope. I mean, unless there's a... Sergio. Sergio Garcia,
Sergio
too,
Garcia.
So. I mean, he got married. He doesn't care about golf anymore. He won his major.
I like that. 6-6s versus the field.
Is it the new Tiger? It's the new Tiger versus the field.
It's 6-6s are that dominant.
And Tiger Woods would be with Chris 5-5, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go, Chris. You don't have to change your name at all. And speaking of dominant, Tim Tebow was once that on the football field. Not really, but that's what Mitchell Trubisky looked like in his first preseason game, outshining Mike Glennon. And while John Fox, he says, I've been here before, quote, the first time we threw Tim Tebow out there in Denver, it was pretty similar. It brought quite a lot of attention. Is it a good thing or a bad thing for Trubisky? He's already being compared to Tim Tebow.
Yeah, it's not what you want as a quarterback. You never want to be compared to Tim Tebow. Now, my question with John Fox is, why aren't you buying the hype? Like, if your option of anti-hype is Mike Glennon, like, you might just want to buy the hype.
Yeah.
Your choices are hype or Mike Glennon. I'm going with hype.
You're telling me Mike Glennon isn't hype?
And clearly ain't the choice of hype in this one.
Did you guys see Tim Tebow's commercial? He's in a car, and they've got mascots from other SEC teams that try to cut him off, and they almost get in accidents with him.
It's Tim Tebow's birthday, by the way.
Oh, shout out Tim Tebow. He's probably recovering a hit in the head this weekend, and he just walked to first.
It was like 3 years ago when like ESPN just went like 24 hours of Tim Tebow birthday coverage. Like, they had all his shirtless pictures and everything. He was a one-man show.
He still is a one-man show. And we'll end the sports update. Chris, I know you're looking forward to this. 4 o'clock today, the NBA will release their full schedule. We've got the opening week and the Christmas Day schedules. Several key games you want to keep an eye on when they happen. When Paul George and Chris Paul return to their former teams. Plus, Chris, I know you're looking forward to a matchup of 1-2s. And personally, I'm looking forward to when DeMarcus Cousins travels back to Sacramento.
That might be the first game of the year. Just get that out of the way.
No, they already said the Pelicans opener is against the Warriors at home. It's I don't understand at all.
Oh.
If I was the – how many times do the Pelicans host the Warriors?
It's either three
one
or four.
Yeah. Well, they host them at least one or two times. They play.
If I play them once, I would not want somebody like that to be my opening opponent. I want the worst possible draw to be my opening day team.
It is the Warriors' second game, so I guess that counts as something. The Warriors open with the Rockets, then travel to New Orleans.
Every team should sell out their opener. I would not want a high-profile team to play me in the opener at home. Up next, what we've learned on today's show, Idaho Sports Talk with Bob and Chris. We're on from 1 to 3. Caves and Prater will follow from 3 to 6. That's upcoming on Sports Radio, The Ticket. We are freezing for a reason. It'll be a week from Friday at the Stinker Station in Nampa off Garrity. Come on by and watch Bob, Chris, Caves, and Prater broadcast from a beer cooler jammed with Coors Banquet beer. For every case of Coors Banquet sold, the Wildland Firefighter Foundation will receive 25 cents. We're freezing for a reason. Friday, September 1st on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
And before you guys start freezing, it's time to figure out today what we learned on Idaho Sports Talk with Bob and Chris, sponsored by Pro Ep Sports, your full-service pro shop and bowling specialist with high-quality bowling balls, bags, shoes, and accessories located right inside Westie's Garden Lanes in Garden City. And we'll start with the big news. Kellen Moore got his second start in the NFL, this time not so great. He played the entire first half for the Cowboys. 8 of 17 for 69 yards, led them only to a field goal. We got a text from Frankie D. In Boise, he said, I'm the biggest Kellen Moore fan ever. Loved him when he got some in some Lion games. Loved him at the end of the season last year. He is not looking good this year. I don't even think he looked good in the first game. He will make an awesome coach. Maybe he should think about putting the shoes up soon. He's just too small.
As long as those NFL checks keep coming, if someone's paying you to be a quarterback, you don't want to just give that up. I mean, that's the thing about it. And I will say this. With Kellen Moore, when he struggles, he's the type of guy where everybody can see he's struggling because you're seeing a smaller guy there who's not, you know, somebody who's typically 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", that you see at that spot. So it almost seems like he's out of place and it's easier to spot him being bad. There's guys who have cannon arms and are bad in these preseason games all the time, but it's just less striking than it is when somebody who looks smaller than everybody else is bad.
Let's say he goes 8 for 10 in the next outing and throws for 150 yards and a touchdown or two. Everybody's going to be back on the other side of the bandwagon, right?
That's Dallas. That's how they kind of react. They overreact to a lot of
everything.
Things. But there is he doesn't have a lot of game experience. Mm-hmm. We have a team that we think can compete for a Super Bowl. Our quarterback, we like our starter in Dak, but if he were to go down, we're trusting this, even though I don't really think he would be considered like an amateur driver to a Ferrari, but it's that kind of an approach.
Well, and I also think that, as you mentioned, the measurables, not big, and he doesn't have a cannon of an arm. And there's nothing that's going to change either of those things.
He also has the hardest job in the NFL. I've now realized he has the hopes of two separate nations, if you want to say, on his shoulders. He has Boise State and all left-handers who ever wanted to play football, because right now he's the only left-handed quarterback in the NFL. And as a left-hander, if he gets cut, that's the worst day ever. I can't watch the NFL anymore. I can't relate. I'm going to watch baseball.
There's no other lefties. There's no other lefties in camp with anybody.
Not that I've heard of. I mean, there was even a tweet Chris showed me that it said Kellen Moore's playing like he doesn't want any left-handers in the NFL.
Well, I think when you look at people who have left-handed kids, give that baseball glove to them. You can get a lot of money to be a left-handed setup man and come in and pitch to one hitter, and you're going to get millions of dollars if you're good.
I think this is a problem, though. Like, we can't get to the point where we can only have right-handed quarterbacks. I feel like it's unfair. Like, as a lefty, I think you need to speak out on this. Like, this is a prejudice. Like, I'm a lefty, I can't play quarterback?
What percentage of the population fishes left-handed, you know?
You would think 50%.
No,
but
it's definitely not.
Probably about 30%, 33%.
I don't know if it's that high.
All right, let's say it's 25%. There's one.
How is there not 64 quarterbacks and one's left-handed if you take first and second string from last year? Well, you would think, isn't the argument it's worse on the offense? The ball flies funny. It comes on the other shoulder for the receivers. Oh, it should be the same as baseball. The defense isn't expecting it.
And the coaches have to redesign their playbook because, you know, the open side of the quarterback's a different side, so you might have to line up your primary receiver on a different side. Maybe those things play into it. But I don't – if we get to the point where, like, we're just not even looking at left-handers as NFL quarterbacks, like, that's a problem.
Jeff Cade's in studio. Jeff, do you think it matters whether the quarterback's right or left-handed?
Well, apparently to maybe high school coaches somewhere down the line, they're not letting left-handers be quarterbacks because only one of them's ending up in the NFL. So it matters to somebody. I know that you have a lot of left tackles that make a lot of money. If you had a lot of left-handed quarterbacks, you'd have a lot of right tackles. And you can't just take your left tackle and flip them. Mm-hmm. That's a different stance and all of that. So I think the league is set up to not support them. And I'm sure if they're great and good enough, there'd be no issue. But I don't know. Was it David Green at Georgia? Was he a lefty?
He was lefty, yes. Very good.
You know, in baseball, you encourage guys to throw left and hit right or bat left. I mean, you know, I don't have the answer to that. But it doesn't seem somebody out there is not letting them develop. But I don't know. It's because, oh, he's left-handed. He sucks. I just don't see many of them. I don't.
Lefty, you go to a different position. Like that's it sounds like it's what it is, and that's kind of weird, sad too. But the fishes of the world should want to be able to grow up wanting to be an NFL quarterback. He can't do
it. He can do it all he wants, but where are they? I don't see him. We call a lot of college football games. I don't see him there, so I'm not going to blame it on the NFL. I don't see him at that level. Yeah. I'd say somewhere when they're younger, they're not grabbing the ball with their left hand and throwing it.
Jeff, what do you guys have on the show today?
We're going to talk about left-handed quarterbacks, and we've got whether or not indoor soccer is going to be a successful venture here. Could it ever make it based on that huge crowd? I think it has a very unique spot that could really do some things that's pretty different than some of the other minor league sports. Mike McCall is going to talk to us about it at 4:20. Of course, we'll talk about Kellen's performance as well.
Jeff Cave's coming up with Mike Prater in a matter of minutes. He'll be on at 3, and they'll take you home from 3 to 6 here on Sports Radio. The ticket. Interesting thought. I mean, I don't know. I never would have considered. I mean, I understand what he's saying about left tackle, right tackle, who's the blind side.
Yeah.
But I would never have thought it'd be that big a deal, especially if you're talking about peewee football leading into, you know, high school football.
But we've learned it doesn't take much for you to just not be considered, especially at the quarterback position, who you're leaving out of the room and who you're allowing to be a quarterback. So Tim Tebow was a lefty QB, right? Mm-hmm. Michael Vick was a lefty QB. Those the dying breed, Drew Bledsoe.
I mean, lefty. Ken Stabler is probably the best left-handed quarterback, I would think, that I can think of.
So it's strange. Anyway, how about a quarterback with a chicken pox? Is that a thing?
San Diego State's had to worry about that.
That's what I was saying.
Think about different things that come up in camp. Your team getting the chicken pox and passing it around, problem for them, at least right now.
Yeah, tomorrow is at 2:15. We'll talk about the chicken pox.
We'll also talk about what the Aztecs are doing to try to cultivate Charger fans to be their own. Cajun Prater coming up next 3 to 6 here on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.